Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
I want to remind you before we get started, the TickPick is the exclusive ticketing partner of Purple Insider and the Blue Wire Network. TickPick should be your first choice to buy football tickets because they save fans money by never charging service fees ever. Welcome to another episode of Purple Insider. Matthew Collar and Courtney Cronin sitting outside on a very nice but slightly breezy day. So if you hear the wind, I'm sorry.
This reminds me of our days back at Winter Park when we didn't have any place to do it inside because the bank people would yell at us to get out of their lobby. So we'd go sit and sit out front of the big building and do it on the... We were sitting on like a perch, like a little... I don't know. It was weird. Like, we were next to, like, shrubbery. I mean, we're kind of next to shrubbery now, but gosh, you're bringing me back to 2017.
I know. And these September days are delightful, honestly. I mean, because
they really
are. It gets worse
from
here.
Beautiful weather.
But there's a nice breeze, so...
But you were talking about the schedule. Like, I was talking about the ancillary stuff. Worse from here, you're like, man, it gets worse from here for Minnesota. I was thinking about, like, the nice things, like the... weather and
Just thinking about like the degrees going south and potentially the season. I guess we'll find out.
Start there.
Well, let's talk about that because, you know, the game that we have so often played is Talk Me Into.
Yeah.
And now we have a game to work or an actual football game to play our game with Talk Me Into. And so there's a lot of different things that we could discuss from Cincinnati moving on to Arizona, but I like the game, so we're going to do it that way.
Okay.
And I want you to just start off by talking me into a win in Arizona.
Well, they contain Kyler Murray. Mike Zimmer said that it's wishful thinking to think that you can keep him in the pocket, but they have the right rush plan in ways that Tennessee's defense didn't. And Tennessee does not have a very good defense, right? Like, we knew that. We knew that that would be an issue when you're going against this unbelievable athlete who's not just, like, quick. He's quick and fast. And I know that that's, like, people think that that sounds the same. It's not. It's very different things because the decision-making, the ability to make those throws on the run, to go from one side of the field to the other, pause, and launch a throw that becomes a first down, like, that's the tough part of Kyler Murray. So somehow they're able to maybe get some of that pressure on him where they can contain him, force contain him in the pocket and keep your edges high, I guess. Hoping that your secondary is able to bounce back, hoping that Bashaud Breeland doesn't have another game where he's the target of officials because of the penalties. And if he does get out of the pocket, Kyler Murray, that is, then you have your receivers covered. Hoping that it isn't just, it was just more of a fluke thing with your secondary and Breeland and the PI against Cincinnati. But I know you don't want me to talk about the defense. I know you want me to talk about the offense and everything that went wrong in Cincinnati. Well, they won't have 11 offensive holding penalties and false starts. There's got to be some sort of positive regression there because they're going to get their butts chewed this week if they do that in practice. And the thing was, Zimmer said he wasn't seeing them do it in practice during the preseason. So this must have just been, let's chalk it up to first game nerves and the fact that they're back in a loud stadium on the road for the first time. It was hot. I don't know. Every other excuse in the book that you can say that's the reason they had all those penalties. If those penalties don't exist, then you're not in second and 15, second and 20, third and 30, because they're not a team, according to Mike Zimmer, that's built to play a drop back game. So hoping things like that happen and that you can actually have the communication on the offensive line, I think will play into a better situation than what they were faced with, what they put themselves in week one. But I'm also, I mean, I don't want to, like, contradict. I want to, like, win the game. I want, like, to talk you into this. So I'm not even going to mention Chandler Jones. Maybe you'll set me up for something with that later. How did I do?
Well, you did great. I mean, this is always a thing that happens in the NFL where we decide whatever just happened is the absolute truth. And I don't think that the Tennessee Titans are going to be that bad all season, right? And I don't think
not at all.
I don't think the Green Bay Packers will. I don't think the Philadelphia Eagles are winning the Super Bowl. Like, there are a lot of things that happened in week one around the league when you're not there in that city, and you can look at it and go, okay, well, that's probably not going to hold up.
Oh, I think the Texans are winning the Super Bowl. I don't know about you.
Tyrod MVP.
I saw that game and I was like, man, book it. AFC South champs, considering everybody else in the division lost. And now David Culley and Tyrod Taylor are, you know, the new Belichick and Brady.
I do hope the best for Tyrod Taylor because he got jabbed in the lung last year.
And then he lost his job because of an injury in Cleveland. I mean, the guy's been through a ton. But, yeah, no, I get it. Like, we overreact to week one every single year. Everything looks magnified because it's the first real action. And then you see such a difference from what preseason football looked like to be like, oh, my goodness. Like, how did that happen? How did Aaron Rodgers, when he wasn't getting pressured? Literally, they weren't pressuring the quarterback. How do you only score 3 points?
Right.
Like, things like that. But no, I agree with you. It's more magnified in the city that you're in and the team that you're covering. And I think from that 30,000-foot view, you can look at it like the league at large. And it doesn't look as bad. And I know that the Vikings lost to Cincinnati. And, like, let's not try to shine a turd here. It was really bad. It was a really bad loss. But there were some positives in that game. The fact that they were somehow able to keep themselves in it offensively in the second half. There's got to be some sort of takeaway there that you can think might actually play out in Arizona.
Right. I think that so from the week one, that doesn't have to be who you are. Like, this team should be better than that. The problem is more that 0-1 is bad with the schedule. And if you go 0-2 because you are playing a tough Arizona team and then you have to play Wilson and Mayfield. And even then, like, I'm not 100% sure you just go 2-0 against Detroit and Carolina because you just lost to Cincinnati. So and one of those games is on the road and Carolina almost beat you last year. So it's not just like, oh, right in W's guaranteed. If you don't win this one, then all of a sudden, just the math doesn't look good for you. The path doesn't look good for you. But as far as you talking me into them bouncing back and winning, I am very much 50-50 on this game. I really feel like this could go either way. I don't think what Arizona did in week one makes me go, oh, well, the Vikings could never. Like, they're just, it's just an L because they're so much better. I think that they're actually very Vikings-ish. The difference is Kyler Murray, or could be Kyler Murray, but I think they're Vikings-ish in the way that they're flawed, but they've got a lot of talented players, and any given week, they could be great, or they could struggle. And that's my impression right now of the Cardinals until they change. So I think I'm like 50% talked into they could go and win.
I'm honestly the same way, even though I just tried to set up a scenario where I'd make you believe that they could win. I will probably end up picking them to lose this game. I feel like there's some sort, I mean, we heard it today in press conferences and just kind of that tightness around this team that didn't really exist on Monday when we talked to Mike Zimmer, Danielle Hunter, KJ Osborne. They're still processing Cincinnati. Like, I think on film, it kind of looks worse what you saw Arizona do to Tennessee. Not like the Vikings digesting all of their screw-ups in Cincinnati. It's really the next opponent, I think, looked really, really difficult. So if you go 0-2, though, the hole that even with the 17-game schedule, like the hole, how deep that hole is to dig yourself out of is going to be really tough because you have two really tough games back-to-back at home. And, yeah, you're fortunate that you're at home. You'll hope to play off your home crowd, the whole thing. But that's... it feels like that could be a very quick landslide.
Well, and you look down the road, too, and Baltimore is obviously going to be a good team.
Yep. And this could be must-win for Baltimore this week when they play Kansas City because then they have 4 road games. That's tough. Like,
but I think overall they'll be a competitive team when the Vikings face them.
Yeah.
So they're not going to be easy, and they have a good defensive line and so forth. The Pittsburgh Steelers have a great defense, so that's going to be tough for the Vikings. The Cowboys have a great offense. That's going to be tough. Like, it doesn't ever get easy after this. So you really have to survive this and then get into the second half of the schedule, because it can all be sort of undone early on. 1-3, 0-4. I mean, you are in such a big hole there. And then you don't get the luck of playing the Packers early when Aaron Rodgers has been screwing around for months. You play them at the end of the season when they'll be in full go, and presumably it'll be a race in the NFC North. So how much they need this is more based on just the way the schedule plays out than it is saying that what they were in Cincinnati is what they're going to be. All right, what can I talk you into?
All right, I'm going to steal my own idea here, or the idea I thought you might ask me to do. Talk me into Chandler Jones coming back down to earth and not wrecking the left side of the Vikings offensive line.
You know, I want to nominate someone for the most taken for granted player of the last 5 years of Vikings football. And his name is Riley J. Reef. I don't know what his middle name is, but...
Joe. J-O.
J-O is right. That's right. that is an inside J-Oak. But anyway, actually, when I said Delvin J. Cook the other day, it actually was Delvin.
Delvin James Cook. Yeah, he's exactly. Named after his dad.
So anyhow, Riley Reef was never a supreme Hall of Fame gold jacket, put him in Canton left tackle. He was not Orlando Pace. He's not Teron Armstead. He's solid. And when you would go up against a great pass rusher, you knew that Riley Reef gave you a chance for most of the game to be okay, to where your game was unlikely to be ruined. I can only remember maybe one or two games where Jerry Hughes in that Buffalo game destroyed him. Khalil Mack maybe once or twice. But aside from that, like, Riley Reef was really solid week in, week out. And now with Chandler Jones going up against Rashad Hill, it's just a massive, massive mismatch. And that one is hard to talk you into, aside from saying that if the Vikings can run the football, and I know what I sound like here, but this is the best I can do. If he can run the football successfully, Kirk Cousins' numbers when he has second and short, third and short, are so outrageously better than they are in long situations. And it just makes it so much more difficult for pass rushers when you're doing the play actions, when you can boot away. We've seen this happen a handful of times when they get ahead of the sticks because they can run. Even elite pass rushers just don't have great days against them. That's why Chicago gives them so many problems, right? Because Akeem Hicks shuts down the run and then Khalil Mack can just do his thing. But I'm thinking of like Philadelphia 2 years ago where Rashad Hill played and Brandon Graham was going up against him, and it was fine because they were ahead of it the whole game. So I think that there is a path to not getting sacked five times. But that is the one and only path, because Cincinnati was able to take advantage of them when they were behind the sticks. And I think every single team will. And I keep going back to what Mike Zimmer said, we're not built to play like that. It's just true.
No,
you're not.
Right.
And that's the only way to negate Chandler Jones.
Yeah, I appreciate the effort. I don't know if he'll get five sacks. I don't. I feel like that was an anomaly. Because, like, when we talk about pace, he'd be on pace for 85 sacks. I think that would break a single season record by a long shot.
Like 62 sacks,
exactly.
Or something?
But I don't think they're going to have as stupid of a game plan as Tennessee did in just leaving Taylor Lewan out there. And then when they put a tight end over there in max protection, the tight end wasn't even chipping your star defensive end. He was just getting the other guy, especially if they played up in the box. Like, I just feel like he didn't have the help that he needed. So they clearly won't do that. They'll probably throw multiple tight ends over there at it, like they do with Khalil Mack, like they've done in other situations where you have really good elite edge rushers. But I think Chandler Jones is going to wreak havoc on this game and just take advantage of that weakness. Like, unless you're like going to all of a sudden pull a switcheroo and put Brian O'Neill over at left tackle, that's not happening. I don't trust Rashad Hill over there, and it's nothing against him. I just think it's a complete disadvantage for him in terms of skill level. He's a good pass protector, but I mean, you have Taylor Lewan is a Pro Bowler, right? At one point, like, and Rashad Hill is a veteran backup playing left tackle until your Christian Darrisaw experiment decides it wants to work out. That's going to be really tough. I can't be talked into that one.
Well, I've got no other attempts.
That's fine. No, I appreciate you. I appreciate the effort because I knew that that was, I set you up for failure because I knew that was a no-win situation. But it had to be addressed.
Especially since they just slowed down Derrick Henry in the run game. And I think that that, it's so funny to be talking about it this way in the year of 2021, how it sort of all connects back to the run game. But yeah, the Vikings are not going to pull a 2018 and go in the shotgun and make quick passes and just like
matriculate the ball down the field. Someone's going to get fired if they try to do that. And the offensive coordinator here knows that that's not how Zim wants to play offense. That's just not going to happen. And they really aren't built like that. Could they be? Yeah, I think there could be a little bit more of a balance, but hell, you didn't even see any balance last week because they weren't able to establish a ground game, which then, of course, and I know that all the football outsider nerds of the world will tell me, oh, you don't need the run game to set up play action. If you're in 2nd and 20, there's no threat of the run, right, at least what you believe. So, you know, there's no way to do that. There's no way to establish a deep passing attack. Like, the only way you could honestly do that is rolling him away from pressure. Like, yes, not even with bootleg, just rolling him straight up away with,
right,
pressure.
Right. And I think they will try that. I mean, I think
that changes launch points, you know?
Exactly. And I think the other part about that is there isn't a connection necessarily with teams that run the football really well and play action. Like, so there will be, even if you're a bad, here's a good example. The 2016 Vikings couldn't run for 2 freaking yards, but yet they were one of the best play action teams in the league. Because defenses are going to play the same way each week. So that's the connection. But when there's no threat of play action, you might as well not even bother because no linebacker is jumping up to try and stop somebody on 3rd and 20 if it's a fake run. So I think that's kind of how that works. I want you to talk me into KJ Osborne, difference maker.
I think the sheer number of snaps that he played in week 1, and I know we've seen this like a few times with Aldrick Robinson, never with Chad Beebe playing that much, really never with Laquon Treadwell playing that much. It's been so sporadic that they've had a difference maker as their wide receiver 3. The way that he continues on in this role, I think those catches that he made show Kirk Cousins, yeah, I can throw to this guy in critical situations. Throwing to him on 3rd and 24 and the body control and staying in bounds and trying to hurdle that guy, and that set up Adam Thielen's touchdown. The 4th and 4 catch, though, I think is the one that Kirk called elite, just that move that he made. I just, you know, there's the body of work, and it's something that has been going on for him since spring, yep, so that makes a solid case. D.D. Westbrook, though, I don't think is ready yet. I think that last week was a pretty was indicative of where they think D.D. is at in terms of workload, because he should be your number 3 receiver. Like, he should be. Like, you can put him in the slot, and you can put the other 2 outside. They will continue to run 11 personnel, I think, as much as they did in week 1. I know that because you can run out of 11 personnel, too. That's what they did last year. They barely use it to, like, throw out of it. But you can do that and still have an effective run game. So we'll see the snap count continue to be pretty big for him until, I guess, D.D. Westbrook is ready to play a more considerable role. But, you know, Osborne can do things for you, I think, that will really, like, maybe it doesn't show up in the stat sheet because he's freeing up some chances for Justin Jefferson. If they can actually establish a deep passing attack, if they can, you know, I think that if you can't do that, then you end up going short passing game, some slants, throw some crossing routes in. Like, there are ways to do it where it's not just dinking and dunking your way down the field. But using KJ Osborne more than situationally is going to be the key for them, because the second you go back to what you did with, like, the wide receiver 3 here the last couple of years, teams are going to key in on that. You're going to have your secret target on 3rd down taken away. Also, the tight end group, we didn't see anything from them in week 1. So I anticipate those targets going KJ Osborne's way. Because they're going to need him to block. So they stop Chandler Jones.
They are going to need him to block.
So there will be no passes to the tight end. All those targets go to KJ Osborne.
I'm slightly talked into KJ Osborne. Throughout training camp, you always have this feeling of, You know, we've seen guys emerge in training camp, and who knows.
What's he going to do it when the lights are on?
Right, but his first time out was doing it when the lights were on, making a play with the football. And I don't think he's really a deep threat, but I also don't think you need necessarily someone to be this big deep threat who's just always going 40 yards down the field. I think that having someone who's just reliable and can make a play, I mean, this, it was very Jarius Wright-ish to have just made a play.
That was
a
the
big
first
situation.
Person I thought of from 2016, the last like guy that was had a role that wasn't just a situational third and short type role or trick play type role. Like Jarius was a consistent element of this offense with Diggs and Thielen and you know, who was before that?
Well, you had your Charles Johnson, your Mike Wallace.
The 2014 to 15 and then 16 and him coming on. So I think that's a great comparison because he's really the last like third receiving threat that was a consistent, give you 400, 500 yards, maybe like three or four touchdowns a year type threat. I think KJ Osborne could set up perfectly for that.
Now, there is a part of me, though, that looks over at the other team and says,
look at all your weapons.
Rondale Moore, Christian Kirk, AJ Green, and then DeAndre Hopkins. And this is where we go, well, look, one team said we've got to give our quarterback everything, and the other team said hopefully a fifth rounder becomes something, and maybe he will. And it seems like just from that he did way more than we ever saw from Chad Beebe.
Yeah.
Just from a big third down conversion where
two
he made a special play, right? And then a fourth down that was really impressive. So I am buying on KJ Osborne. I am convinced that he can add more than we've seen before. Whether that becomes truly dangerous, I think we're going to have to find out as it goes along. What would you like me to talk you into?
Talk me into Patrick Peterson going back into the house he built. I don't know if he actually built it, but no. Don't think so. Talk me into him going back in there and just having an unbelievable day, picking off DeAndre Hopkins. I don't know if he'll shadow him. There was not enough to really go on for a storyline as far as Patrick Peterson in week one because Breland's play was so glaring at times. So I feel like this is the true Patrick Peterson debut, and it comes week two against his former team.
Fans are going back to stadiums, so you have to be ready with the best Minnesota football gear. That's why you have to check out SodaStick. I saw a ton of SodaStick gear around training camp. I expect to see it in the stadium as well. There are so many cool designs on hats, t-shirts, and hoodies for the fall weather, including the John Randall design that is extremely cool. There's also the Straight Cash homie Randy Moss homage, Can't Stop the Thielen hats, and a personal favorite, the old video game designs, the Tecmo fans will appreciate. Check it all out at sodastick.com. That is SOTASTICK.com. Everything is screen printed here in Minnesota, and I can tell you that the shirts are comfortable and they last because half of my closet is now SodaStick at this point. Again, that's sodastick.com, Minnesota sports inspired goods, and keep your eye out for our SodaStick giveaways. Folks, Minnesota football is back, and there's no need to exhaust yourself searching all over the internet for Minnesota football tickets anymore because TickPick, that's TickPick, is the original no-fee ticket site and the only one you'll ever need to go for NFL tickets. TickPick got rid of all those awful service fees like the other ticket sites charge, which lets them guarantee the best prices of all of their NFL tickets. Don't believe it? If you can find better prices for the same seats on another ticket site, TickPick will give you 110% of the difference on your purchase price. We've got quite a slate of home games in downtown Minneapolis, including revenge game for Cleveland when they return to Minnesota and plenty more. Visit tickpick.com/insider today and use the promo code insider to save $10 on your first order for Minnesota football tickets.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Would it be the house that Aeneas Williams built, maybe?
When was that stadium built?
A while back. Like, I mean, I think when they moved to Glendale from Phoenix,
like
would have been...
In the 2000s, yeah, in the 2000s, right? Like 03? Yeah.
And Aeneas Williams, I think, left right before that. But he was like their best player in their history before they went to Glendale, I think. But I'm not sure about the timeline entirely. Anyway, this will be very interesting because Patrick Peterson was not tested a whole lot. And he did noticeably stay on one side, I believe, throughout the entire game. So he did not travel around with the wide receiver. And Ja'Marr Chase ended up notably on Bashaud Breeland and had some big plays there. But we just didn't get this feeling of what does it really look like. And another problem that we're dealing with this week is the All-22 film, the coach's film, has not been put out yet. So it's extremely hard to look at corners and go back and say, oh, Patrick Peterson was actually phenomenal or actually bad, because you could only tell on TV when they actually target someone. So that's a hard analysis to do. So we are kind of getting our first real look at him, and the targets that they have are just dynamic, explosive. Rondale Moore is one of the quickest players I think I've ever seen with the football. His explosiveness is crazy, and he averaged, I think, 17 yards catch last week. So there's a lot to be concerned about or nervous about with the secondary and with Patrick Peterson going back, because I feel like this will be his first test. And if he does end up on DeAndre Hopkins, I mean, that's one of the truly elite wide receivers in the league. Now, I've not done a good job of talking you into it. So let me attempt to just say that Patrick Peterson throughout training camp preseason didn't show us much. We didn't see him in any preseason games. On a daily basis in training camp, he looked fine. It wasn't like he was getting roasted and falling on his face. But he is as savvy of a veteran player as exists in the NFL. And he knows some of these receivers extremely well. He knows their tendencies. He knows that building. He knows that coach. He knows their route combinations. Mm-hmm. That's where I could see Patrick Peterson having an advantage. I don't think he'll have some perfect game, some Darrell Revis or like Marshawn Lattimore against Davante Adams this last week. I don't think that's what we'll get from Patrick Peterson. Those days are probably in the past. But can he be very good because of his familiarity and his veteran intelligence? I'm going to say yes.
I can be talked into that. I think situationally, and yeah, we didn't see it against Cincinnati because those targets, they saw the weak link very early on. I'm wondering, are we going to, at least in the early part of the season, until the Vikings get a good look at Peterson's athleticism to know, okay, is he a step slower going against elite receivers? Will they just play sides? Because remember in 2019, or was it the end of 18, they had to start doing that with Rhodes? Like because of the injuries and stuff like that, and just like him being a step slower, will they have to do that with Patrick Peterson at some point? And just like in Peterson and Breland, like will we start seeing somebody shadow, you know, follow guys into the slot, do whatever? Like, I think Patrick Peterson's the best corner on this roster. I really do, but he's also 31 years old. So I think he will go in there and use the institutional knowledge. This is why you can probably use more of like the zone matchups if you want to go that route, because it relies more on like the intuition and just like the mental makeup than it does like pure athleticism versus athleticism. I think he will. I don't think he's going to get like torched by a DeAndre Hopkins. I think he's honestly too smart of a player to let that affect him.
So let me double up real quick. I got two that I want from you. Okay. Because one can be sort of quick and then the other one might be a little more complicated before we wrap up.
Okay.
Talk me into why it was a good idea not to trade Cameron Dantzler to the San Francisco 49ers.
Well, they're getting on the plane, and Mike Hughes makes that pick to seal the win for the Kansas City Chiefs, and they're like, damn it. Insult to injury. Right. How poetic was that? I mean, my God. I think that they realize we can't give up on this guy just yet. He played 13 snaps on special teams in the preseason. And I know Mike Zimmer on Wednesday said, well, if he wants to play, he has to play special teams. He's a backup. Backups play special teams here. Well, you got to get him better there first. And I think that that's on coaching. Because, you got to do all you can do. Like, if you don't want to play it, then, like, that's on him. And he's going to find himself on the wrong side of this thing eventually and cut him. But it's too early, I think, to move on from him because – you know, if you trade him away, and the trade was what, for Drake Kirkpatrick or for...
Well, I don't know what the offer was. It was just reported that they had called about Cameron Dantzler, and I think they are signing Drake Kirkpatrick.
That's what it was. Yeah. They were signing Kirkpatrick because they had the injury to what's-his-name during...
Verrett,
yes.
Think.
Yeah, so they had a lot of injuries. They got hurt a lot in week one. But I think that they still see if San Francisco was willing to call about him, they say, okay, well, another team sees the potential. We can't give up on this yet. And they just, you know, the Mike Hughes thing is just maybe an anomaly. Maybe Mike Hughes won't actually be good in Kansas City. I don't know. But you can't, that's a bad look. You start trading away, like, corners who have been here a year. You already lost Jeff Gladney, like, to a situation that was not within your control. But goodness gracious, that would just be, I think, a really ugly look. And they don't have any depth. Like, that's the problem. Like, their depth isn't any good, but, like, at least you don't have any right now. And I don't think you can afford to do that.
Right. That's the biggest thing for me for not trading him away is that he is depth. And I don't have much trust still of Chris Boyd, despite how he played in the preseason.
Yeah.
There's been a lot of we love Chris Boyd now, but this is a seventh rounder who last year got a chance to play and really struggled. So I'm going to need to see a lot more to be convinced that that's fine. So it's better to have some numbers. At the same time, if you don't like a guy, just get rid of him. I mean, it just it feels like they've just had enough of that with Dantzler, and he is in the doghouse.
Yeah, he's definitely done some things that are wrong. Like, as far as, you know, where he's at right now with his career and just being a starter last year. Like, I just want to, like, implore this and just drive this point home that he started last year and he wasn't great. Like, you and I talked about this earlier today where, oh, best rookie cornerback for the second half of the season. Yeah. Why? Because Jeff Okuda was hurt and was terrible when he was playing. All the other rookie cornerbacks were terrible last year. Usually cornerback is a very hard position to play right off the bat because of what they call you for and just, like, every advantage is to the receiver. So it's like, yeah, he was the least worst of a bad bunch. Like, let's not look too highly into those PFF numbers just from his rookie season from a short, small sample size because, A, he was hurt a good bit of 2020 because of injuries and you know, the sample size you have from Dantzler never led me to believe, like, oh, this guy's going to be competing for a job this year. We knew the second that they signed Peterson, Breland, Alexander, that he was going to be a depth piece and that he was going to be using this year effectively as his rookie year to, like, learn how to play the position.
Right. Also, let's be responsible with PFF grades. I showed you the chart. He had two good games last year with the coverage grade, too, out of all the games that he played, and it was against Mike
Backup
Glennon
quarterbacks,
and Mitch Trubisky. Right. So, you know, I could see, and it was always an unknown for me, and I could see why they would get to this place where they just want to play veterans over him. But there is a part of me that says, well, look, if you don't think the guy is going to be anything and you've relegated him to not even playing, I mean, what's the point? But I think I'm talked into that not being a good idea.
I just think it's too early.
Yep.
Like, he hasn't done anything that egregious. Like, it'll cost you a game. Like, they'll find a way to use him, and they need depth at some point because their depth is so bad right now. It's too early. It's just too early.
Okay, last one, and then we'll pick our scores or whatever you want to do. Just talk me into this Anthony Barr thing not being red flags, whistles, flares shot in the air, just all of the danger
that he's
signs,
not going on
panic
IR.
Buttons.
Yeah.
Is that it? Is that the way to talk me into it? Because him not practicing today when we were up there, I thought, I mean,
well,
what's going to happen here?
The way I can talk you into this is telling you they know his body. They've seen him for, you know, nearly, you know, 8 years now. They know the knee. They know it's been a chronic thing for him, like, on and off. And even Zim said some days he feels good, some days he feels bad. Really hoping that he starts feeling good here because, you know, the run defense, I'm not going to, like, blame that on the linebacking group. Like, they ran the ball differently in the second half. And honestly, I felt like Nick Vigil had a decent game. Is it the same as having Anthony Barr in there? No. But they'd be okay without him for another week, I think. But as far as him and long-term health and him not ending up on IR, this is just something that he's working through and that maybe he has to have another procedure or something else. And then he'll be okay. But until they put him on IR, I guess I wouldn't be too convinced that it's that serious.
Not convinced.
I'm
no,
sorry.
That was tough. That was tough.
I think it's a serious problem. The guy hasn't practiced. Like, I mean, he has not been out there in earnest since August 6th. He practiced in limited capacity Wednesday last week, and then he's DNP. He's DNP for the game. That's a serious concern for me. It's a problem. Like, Anthony Barr and the injuries throughout his career here in Minnesota, like, they've been up and down. I mean, you think about the hamstring injury in 2018, and some of the other things, the pectoral injury last year. Like, you need this guy. Like, you really do. I know I'm basically answering for you, but...
Yeah, you just tanked. You just tanked that answer
I'm
in
sorry.
The game. So.
It's hard, because I know what I believe internally, and that's a hard one for me to try to fake.
Yeah, that's why the game is the game. So you don't think the Vikings will win this contest?
I haven't picked officially yet. I will probably... I'm, like, leaning probably 80% towards Arizona. At the time of us recording this podcast, my picks don't go live until Friday morning. So with the ability to change based on what comes out in the injury report, who knows? But I'm going to end up picking Arizona in this game. I don't think it's going to be nearly as much of an ass kicking as it was with Tennessee, just like laying down and dying in that first game. But I think that Kyler Murray is going to be way too going from Joe Burrow to this team. And that's why I was asking Mike Zimmer today. Like, there are some parallels. Like, they go four wide all the time. You got to see, well, not four wide, but you got to see some of that with, like, you know, really three really dynamic, really good receivers. Can you take any of those tendencies that you had in coverage and be like, okay, that was good. Let's do that against the Cardinals. I think there's ways to beat them and win this game, but when I think of Chandler Jones and what he did last week, I'm so concerned about this offense still. I think defensively they'll be okay. Like, Kyler Murray's going to get his. You can't keep him in the pocket forever. That's fine. But I am very worried about what this offense, like, this offensive line, there's no quick fix. Christian Darrisaw is not going to be playing this weekend. So Mike Zimmer said it was a long process. That leads me to believe it's not going to be this week at all. So I don't know. I right now I'm not picking the Vikings. No. What about you?
I think I'm going to pick Mike Zimmer pulls out all the stops defensively. Every scheme he's ever thought of is going in this week because you have no other choice. I mean, you have to win this. And I will say that they win with a Greg Joseph field goal.
Hey, that's what I had last week.
At the last minute. And boy, you were right. I mean, you got the
Greg Joseph. It just wasn't, you know, regulation, but he did kick a field goal to tie the game in regulation.
Well, he probably would have again if Dalvin Cook hadn't fumbled and the referees hadn't called it a fumble. So I'm going to go with that this week.
Okay.
I'm going to go with a Vikings bounce back where it will be ugly at times, but the defense does enough to hold down Kyler Murray, cause a turnover or something.
They have to force some turnovers. Yeah. Like, that's something that we just didn't see in week one.
And so I'm going to go that they win. I mean, I haven't decided on a score yet, but maybe like 27-24 or something.
Okay.
Last minute
close,
field goal.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, okay. Well, thank you for your time. And you mostly did your best until the final question.
You know.
And we will do
not
it again.
Not all heroes wear capes.
That's true. So we'll do it again next week.
Don't know what that has to do with this, but
no,
it's fine.
Nothing.